This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
Darius, I apologize. I need 2 seconds of Justin and Garrett's time. Who's the next coach at Nebraska?
Darius Thomas.
I'm going to make noises all day.
And Garrett Wright.
I mean, that's your prerogative, my man. It's an audio podcast. You got to have a signature somehow.
We have some news to share here on this episode. So we have Matt Desmond joining us to talk about the future of sports creative community. And then the four of us are going to catch up and talk about what we've been up to the last 6 months. I hope you've also noticed that we have some new graphics. And I want to give a big shout out to Dylan Winters for creating the new logo with us. Give him a follow at Dylan Winters Co. on IG or Twitter. I also want to give a shout out to the graphic team, Tyler Britt, Carlos Carter, and Kayla.
All right. Well, what are we doing today, kids?
Time dot is.
Oh my God, it's been so long, I've literally forgot about time that is.
Mm-hmm.
What a nightmare.
Let me start my local record.
Yeah, I should do that too. Great idea.
There we go.
I'm not quite there yet. Give me 1 sec. All right,
Justin, when are we clapping?
I felt like it was Christmas time with those bells.
My keys.
Asking for money. What do you need?
Want to clap? Go ahead, Brock. On 04. Justin was 3 years late on that clap on my feet.
Oh, I was early relative to you guys. It's going to be spot on, I promise.
Can't wait.
Got to break off the rust somehow. Darius looks like he's popping something on my screen. He's frozen.
No, he's not. Am I frozen? On my screen.
Nah, you're good on mine, but I see you eating, but.
Yeah, just snacking a little bit.
What are you chowing on, brother?
Some sour candies.
Hell yes, the best.
Sour hits.
My wife makes fun of me for my love of sour candy, and I would eat. Sour heads, I would eat warheads, I'd eat warheads. Sour patch kids, I would eat like,
oh, yeah.
You put a sour candy in front of me and I'm gonna just absolutely bow it.
Yeah, I hadn't had a warhead in a long time.
I don't think I have either.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today, we have Matt Desmond here with us, and we're going to be talking about some new news for the sports creative community, some exciting news that has been in the works for a little bit, and we're finally excited to share it. So, Matt, I'm not going to steal your thunder. Welcome, and thanks for joining us, and go ahead and give us the news.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's nice to get back here and get the podcast going. But yeah, so the big news that we've announced is that the sports creative community is now officially in the nonprofit space, serving as a 501c6 nonprofit organization. So we're really excited to start this new venture and really, you know, advocate for creatives on a different level. So yeah, we're excited to really start this journey and, you know, start bringing the creatives to a higher level than what they're having now. So we're really excited to start this new journey.
What was the driving purpose behind developing into a nonprofit status as opposed to just being a loose organization without a nonprofit status?
Yeah, absolutely. So as the community has grown over the years, myself and the Sports Creative Community Board realized we had an opportunity to make a difference for the greater good of the community. So after experiencing everything that happened during the pandemic, I realized that the community needed a source of positivity we could turn to when times were bleak. So converting SCC into a nonprofit, you know, made too much sense. In my experience, you know, I volunteered and served in a nonprofit on a board earlier in my career and always have had a passion just for giving back to the community. So with SCC as a nonprofit, you know, that really helps us, look at, you know, how we can help creators in multiple facets of life. As this is a new venture for myself and the rest of the board, we realized that we really need to start small and, you know, grow each year with the amount of objectives we can achieve. So, you know, creators will see that we put their interest and needs first and foremost, and we plan to hold meetups across the country to provide opportunities for all creatives to network with creators in their own cities. You know, so we want to create that sense of unity in the city, and that's really crucial because not a lot of times creatives don't get together in their own backyard. So we really want to make that possible. So I think so many creatives move multiple times in their careers, and I think it's been evident for all of us on this podcast. And for us, we want to create that environment where creatives can just be themselves and make new friendships, which is so important. Sometimes that's forgotten about. I think it can be lonely in this industry. So I mean, if you're spending a lot of time working, you're forgetting about, you know, who you are outside of work. So creating these opportunities to bring like-minded individuals together, I think it's just so crucial. So aside from meetups, really want to shine a light on creatives, you know, featuring their content and their stories. Everyone in this industry has a voice, and we want to make sure that they're heard and really showcase them in a proper fashion. So I believe as the nonprofit continues to grow, we aim to create grants and scholarships to help creatives in the industry and, you know, for the future of the industry. I think it's crucial to equip creatives in any way that we can and see them succeed in this industry. We want to disrupt this industry in a positive way. And I just want to make sure that creatives are being treated in a positive and fair manner to make this a fun and enjoyable industry for you to come. You know, even once we're done as an industry, we want to make sure that we're handing it off and making sure it's in a really good condition so that it's you know, successful for years to come.
Why the decision to make a nonprofit? Was it so that you could get sponsorships and all that, or so that we could get sponsorships?
Yeah, it was never creating the community to profit for myself. It's more for the community as a whole. How do we give back? You know, I'm much in the mindset of how do we make everyone benefit from this experience and not one individual. So for me, going thinking about, okay, is it going to be a for-profit or a nonprofit experience? The nonprofit just made too much sense. It allows us to work with, you know, companies that, you know, want to support creatives and put them at the forefront. And I really believe the nonprofit allows us to grow in a bigger sense because a lot of communities outside of sports can get introduced to the sports world and are able to interact with the sports creative community. So going in the nonprofit route, I believe, and also our board members thought that it made the most sense for the future of the organization to be housed under a nonprofit model.
So you touched a little bit on how you'd like to see the sports creative community benefit from the SCC becoming a nonprofit. Can you give a little bit more context or explain a little bit more about how they can, how they will benefit and maybe what the vision is going forward? And maybe I feel like those probably overlap. So what can people expect out of this nonprofit?
Yeah, I mean, in the early stages, you know, as any startup or any new organization, you know, comes to life, you know, it's going to be, you know, growing and, you know, we're going to be working with a lot of different companies and learning, you know, what their intentions are with the sports creative community. So a big picture, you know, what can people expect? You know, a lot of opportunities are going to come from this. Everyone that works with the sports creative community is in a volunteer capacity. So we want to start small and, you know, over time, those goals will get bigger. But, you know, in the early going, we want to hold meetups on a consistent basis across the U.S. and eventually worldwide when we get to that point. But creators can kind of see that we want to bring people together because I think what we experienced through the pandemic is we can, you know, kind of get in a lonely space in this industry, having a little bit of uncertainty. So it's a perfect opportunity for us to get back in person and, you know, spread that positivity and just companionship. I know some conferences are going on right now, which is great. We just want to be that positive fixture in the nonprofit space and really listen to what the community needs. So over time, we will be looking into developing grants and scholarships for creatives that are in the industry and then are entering the industry. So we really want to propel the future for success. So there's a lot of different components that are going to be in the works, Justin. I think it's unique because each conversation I have with a sponsor or partner type brings a new conversation to the table. So I think it's always evolving week to week. So it really makes it an exciting avenue that we're going down right now to see what sports creative community can be.
I think with every nonprofit, a big thing you need is you need volunteers and there's work to be done. What are your current needs and what can people do to help out if they want to lend a hand?
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up a good point there, Bronk. You know, there's a lot of ways for people to get involved with the sports creator community. You know, as a nonprofit, we're always looking for volunteers to help us out, carry out the missions to serve creatives. Specifically, we're looking for folks with experience in event planning, social media, content production, our DE&I initiatives, and business development and sales backgrounds. That really is something that we're looking to help raise funds for the sports creative community. But as a whole, that's just a glimpse of some of the opportunities that we're looking for in a volunteer capacity.
During the announcement, we kind of rolled out some of the main goals and purposes of the organization. Can you kind of touch on some of those and in the role that you see this community playing in executing those?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we had our reveal and kind of going back to what you were talking about there, Darius, with our three pillars, and that really, you know, sets a table for our vision of the sports creative community. So I'll go over those pillars now. The first pillar is community. We want to provide a safe space to network, educate, and diversify the community. And I think the community aspect really built organically for the sports creative community. When this community started in 2018, you know, it was just a couple people getting together on Slack after I attended a conference and realized that there wasn't enough time to network at a conference to really take the full effect. So that's what really inspired that 365, 24/7 business model to come to life of what it is today as a nonprofit, being housed on Slack. So I think Slack has really provided the community sense for the sports creative community. Outside of that, another one of our pillars is inclusivity. It's important for us as an organization to provide equal opportunities to all. And, you know, our industry as a whole really needs to do a better job of employing underrepresented racial and ethnic groups. And I think we as an organization want to lead by example and make that a positive change in this industry. So a lot of the initiatives and a lot of the events that we have throughout the year will be reverting back to our DE&I initiatives, and we'll be working with like-minded, you know, groups and companies that share some of the same values as we do. So in that sense, that's how we'll be accomplishing that goal. And the next goal is innovation. You know, there's so many talented individuals in this space, and we really want to encourage creators to push the envelope every day. And I think that's what really, you know, people get a lot of passion from being innovative in this space. It's really easy to get dry. So we want to make sure that we're creative problem solvers. And the majority of the time, people do not see the process that goes into being a creator from start to finish. So there's so many obstacles that one must go through. So we want to provide educational resources from, you know, people inside the community so that the younger people in this industry can rise and not face a lot of those troubling, you know, areas in this industry, and they can proceed on a much smoother path than sometimes the way we might have done. So I think it's on us to really make it right for creatives around the world in the sports space. So with those three visions in mind, we're looking to do a lot that are going to be able to benefit a lot of creatives in this space.
So we've got the background and kind of the pillars. What are some things that the members can look forward to? And also, can you highlight some of those things that we may have done already in the past?
So I think what the community can look forward to coming in the future is we really want to put the creators first. And how we do that is, you know, creating exposure for the creators. So we want to create these spotlights that really feature the creatives and really hear their story and, you know, why they got into the sports industry. And I think it's really interesting. And, you know, through the podcast, we've gotten to learn a lot about the creatives in this space. So for us, we want to take the time and put a lot of our energy into showcasing, you know, what makes this community special. And that really reverts back to the creatives in this space. So looking for spotlights that can help them if, you know, depending on what area they're in their career, if they're looking for a job, you know, we want to set them up for the most success for their job pursuit. If it's someone, at mid-stage in their career, there's other objectives that we want to accomplish with that. But we're also looking to team up with sponsors. And I won't name a sponsor, it's not official yet, but we're in talks with a organization on highlighting, content of the week. And that allows us to, really go through and see how we can elevate the Slack community. So we're going to, try some new things on, highlighting, the trending content that's out there and integrate that into our Slack community. But, there's also some fun things that we've done in the past. We've done some coffee giveaways and some March Madness events. It's just, fun and, light for the community to enjoy. We'll be doing some more of those. But I think it's as we go into the nonprofit space, there's going to be opportunities where we're going to be able to do some raffles, with some vendors and, help out creatives, who are looking to get some new gear or, some new technology. So there's some really exciting things on in the horizon. And we're just really excited to implement that into the community, because I think a lot of creatives are hungry to see some new things out there. And we just really want to be innovative and really embrace the new start for us as a nonprofit.
All right. I guess last thing would be just for those people who aren't in the community, like how can they, what are some ways that they can get involved with the sports creative community?
Yeah, absolutely. So if someone who wants to join the sports creative community who's not already in it, there's multiple ways that you can, find the sports creative community brand. But to join the community, it's very easy for you to do so. It's called sportscreativeslack.com. That's the URL that you'll type in. It'll prompt you with a Google form to fill out. And then shortly after that, you'll be able to join the Slack community. But you can also find us on our Twitter and our Instagram. We're pretty active on those spaces. And yeah, this is a great podcast to listen to as well. So if you're listening to this episode, I urge you to go back and listen to our previous episodes. There's a lot of great content out there and a lot of fascinating stories. So yeah, look forward to more stories to come.
We've talked a little bit about how other people can get involved, but what about sponsors? Say someone's interested in supporting this community and is heavily involved in this community. What are the ways in which they should reach out and talk about some of the sponsorship opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. The sports creative community has a very enriching business development team that we're engaging with the sponsors and partner types. So if they would like to start the conversation, we're happy to set up a time. They can email us at the sports creative community at gmail.com. And from there, we can start the conversation and see how we can work together.
All right. Thanks, Desmond, for updating us, and look forward to seeing what we're able to do as a nonprofit here. And it's good to get the group back together. Brock, Darius, Garrett, it's been a little bit since we've had a recording here. So good to see you guys and talk to you.
Good to see you too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's just jump in. Garrett, what have you been up to the last 6 months?
Oh man. It's been a whirlwind. I went to France. I did drink some beer, both in France and here in the States. But no, my real answer is that over the summer I worked on a couple of different projects. We started a new thing called a series called Trailblazers at Big Ten Network, and so it's like a hour long sit down interview with important people in the Big Ten, alumni, both on and off the field court, athletes, non-athletes. And I got to produce two of those. I got to produce one with Barry Alvarez, which is cool because he is, known mostly for his time as Wisconsin football head coach, but also as a Nebraska alum, as am I. So that was fun to get to talk to him about his time in Lincoln. He was actually a beat cop in Lincoln after he graduated and told us stories of being a cop in Lincoln, walking O Street at 2 a.m. So that was fun. And then worked on one with Tony Dungy, which was really, really cool. Minnesota alum. So got to, set up his interview and, you know, get to know him a little bit and then shoot that. And we did a lot of cool access stuff because he played at Minnesota on the basketball team as well as playing football. So we did some stuff with him at the barn at Minnesota, which is fun. So, you know, projects like that. And then I also got to work on a lead production on a trip to France with the Wisconsin men's basketball team. They went to France for 10 days and, you know, kind of led the production charge on that. We took a crew of, I don't want to say 6, maybe 7 over there and put together 3 30-minute episodes that are airing this fall around, you know, documenting their trip around France. So, you know, always nice when you can get some international trips on the expense card. And it was just a really cool show. So
did you get to add your miles to that?
Oh, I did. That's one of the best parts is getting the miles. I had to make a mileage trip last year to hit my miles, and I'm already there now by the start of October.
That is my issue. I traveled so heavy the front side of this year, and then the other jobs I've done. My son's screaming upstairs.
That sounds like my house.
That was fantastic.
It was a great perfect time.
So I traveled really heavy the front side of this year. And then the backside, I've had jobs that I've been able to drive to. So I haven't done the miles, and I'm at a point right now where I am going to have to, like, I think I'm going to fly to like Alaska and back in a day or something.
Yeah, I did Boston. Yeah. I went and hung out with JP for a day. It was great.
Ooh, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll go Boston.
Yeah, man.
Say hi to JP.
Yeah. But I got to fix lovely in February.
Flip side, my hotel points are insane this year. Just like going to hit like 190, 200 nights in a hotel this year. But
Marriott guy?
Yeah, always Marriott. Yeah.
Big Marriott guy.
Always
big
try to do Marriott. And Delta, although Delta's been a little rough lately.
I'm an American guy.
Yeah. Well, I've taken three American flights this year, and 2 out of 3 were drastically delayed. So I was kind of like, because I was going to do this is just the points podcast for all y'all out there.
I was going to say, this is going to interest maybe 10 people. Yeah,
I tried to do a status match with American because I had some job where I forget which job it was, but American was an easier route to get there. And it was like, they just would not do it. They were just like, nope, no way. You can start from scratch though. And I was like, well, so the first flight, I was like, well, I'll just do it. Maybe I'll just build my American status and I'll be fine. Well, like first flight I did, I was delayed and I didn't get home that night. It's just like, that's a surefire way to, I mean, they don't care about me, but like to make sure I never fly airline again, but they don't care about me.
If you're titanium with Marriott, you get automatic status on United.
Yes, I did that. So, I did that. I have United status. I am ambassador on Marriott. The next big level time of Marriott status is they just give me the Marriott.
They just give you the card.
I just own the Marriott. That's the only status above it.
I will never hit ambassador. Wow. Good for you.
It's not good.
I mean, not good for you. Terrible. It means you're on the road too much, but
I've been ambassador.
But also good for you.
For 2 years. I think it's 1 or 2 more years at ambassador, and I get lifetime either platinum or titanium, something like that. I don't know. It's too much time on the road, kids. Don't do it.
Way too much.
Way too much time on the road.
Well, speaking of on the road, last time we talked, or we recorded a podcast, you lived in a different city.
I did. I moved from Austin back to Kansas City, Missouri. So that's pretty much everybody on this podcast who's ever listened to it before knows that I used to work for the Chiefs. And my wife has had the same job in Kansas City since I worked for the Chiefs. And they wanted her back in the office. And as you just heard, I travel like a million days a year. So we moved back and it's been great. It's good to be back. We love Kansas City. We loved Austin. But you know, we're from the Midwest. Midwest, you know, feels a little bit more like home than Austin does. We're closer to family here. And, I still live out of a suitcase in an airport most of the year anyway. So it works out. And on top of that, I get to, come back. I get to freelance some Chiefs games, which is good whenever I'm in town. Which I miss that crew. I miss doing that. So yeah, it was a win-win,
Except for the whole moving part. Moving sucks. But
outside of that, absolute worst.
I told my wife after this. I was like, we're done moving. I'm not doing this again. We've done it enough.
Still doing the Beck thing, though, right?
Still doing the Beck thing. Been there 2.5 years now. Yeah.
Time flies.
Time flies.
Wild. We finished. It's cool they let you go remote.
Yeah, yeah. I calculated it last year, and I was physically in my office less than 30 days last year. So I was like, is it real? Do I really have to live here? But no, it was good. We had some big projects last year. We finished up New York Mets. They had a season in their new room, full 2110. That was a huge lift. Working on an NFL stadium right now. That'll be done next offseason. But yeah, it's good. It's been busy. It's a great problem to have. We're too busy. If you're an engineer and you want a job, email me, message me, Slack me. Because
we can you teach me how to engineer?
I can with enough time, anything is possible. That's what I tell people. Thanks. Nothing I do is rocket science. But it's years of shooting yourself in the foot repeatedly until you move your foot out of the way and you learn that. So that's engineering.
And just unplugging it and plugging it back in.
Yeah, right? Well, you would honestly be shocked at how much it is. Like, did you turn it off and turn it back on? I mean, oh, it's working. Okay, well, I don't know.
Sometimes things just happen.
Speaking of,
work out that way.
Changes, Justin, you went full-time freelance in the past. How many months has it been now?
I did. Beginning of August, I jumped out on my own and full-time freelance.
And I mean, I think anybody who follows you on LinkedIn knows that you've been busy. How busy how have you been, and what has that transition been like?
Baller effects.
I say that endearingly. I say that I love seeing your updates and I love seeing your work you do, and it seems like you are constantly churning out work.
Yeah, it's it was one of those things where when I got laid off in end of July, I was like, okay, well, I've talked about wanting to do this, going out on my own. I guess now is the best time to do it, if there is a time. And, you know, it's a little scary with two young kids to try and make sure that I'm making enough money to, you know, not cost them anything in a sense. And, so yeah, it was a little crazy. I was talking to a local agency owner who actually gave me my first gig, like that first week out. They needed help, and I've talked to her a couple times before, and she was like, "You're gonna be fine. Like, I'd take the whole month of August off. You'll be totally fine." But that is not what I did, because when you get put in that spot, you're like, "Okay, well, I just gotta go. Like, I need to fight through it and figure out what I can get." And I mean, it sounds good in theory, but there's still a lot of things that I had to learn. Met with a CPA, tried to get into, you know, learning finance stuff. But I will say the 10 years that I spent, you know, building, working internally for a team helped me immensely. I got to see legal contracts, which was huge. And I didn't necessarily appreciate it as much at the time because it was more of a hindrance to what we did. But that was helpful, you know, understanding how to project manage myself and lead myself was huge. So I, fortunately, I'll knock on wood, I think partly, honestly, due to my YouTube channel, I have had so many people reach out to me and say, "We'd love to work with you." I've had to turn people down because I just don't have the bandwidth. But at the same time, I'm still trying to find the sweet spot of what makes sense, what I can take on, what I can't, because I just, A, couldn't say no, and B, wanted to build up enough collateral for myself so that if something happened, if something changed, we've heard about a recession coming for a while now, you know, that I would have a little bit of leeway in my bank account. So yeah, it's been awesome. Been working with a couple different sports teams, former coworkers, project that I just wrapped on, recently posted about with Whitespace. I actually, a funny story is I actually met the person that reached out to me about that job through an interview with a different company, and I stayed connected to them, and just turned out that when I posted, they were looking for somebody motion design, and she reached out and was like, hey, you know, we have this need, you have that skill, are you interested in this? And I was like, hell yeah, absolutely. So it's to be honest, it's been a lot of that, and I like to think that it's partly due to the fact that I've, you know, given back to the community in a sense, through YouTube and through the podcast, and, you know, through other people that I've worked with and tried to help people out along the way. And, you know, if that's the case, it's coming back to me tenfold right now. Cause yeah, I've been super busy and very thankful and appreciative of all the people that have reached out and helped me for sure.
Yeah, man. I mean, it really speaks to the power of, you know, you talked about the YouTube and branding mm-hmm. yourself and all that. Networking. I mean, that's obviously super important, but that networking too. And to your point, like doing it with no expectations, right? Just staying in touch with people because you can, and because they're good people that you want to stay in touch with. And you never know how that stuff will turn out down the road.
I've been wanting to ask you this, JP, but I wanted to save it for this podcast. Is when you are, I think you have a great LinkedIn brand, and I think my link brand is crap. I'm terrible at it. I don't think about it as much as I should. I usually just repost like
I'm going stuff to follow you now.
Beck does. But when you are, and I don't want it to sound non-genuine or artificial, because I do think it's genuinely you, right? And it's somebody who knows you. But when you're crafting that presence, or when you're thinking about posting, do you almost think of it like a biz, like part of your business? Do you have a plan for when and how you post LinkedIn and how you share that content?
That's a great question. I've gone back and forth on it. I follow some people who it's hard, right? Because I also see people who post things that I feel like it, like over time it becomes salesy, and I don't want to get to that point.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that I've learned through doing the podcast, which was really the entry level for me to do the YouTube channel, I've gotten a lot of feedback on the YouTube channel that was like, oh man, this was awesome. I learned a ton. And in my head, I've gone, okay, well, that was something that I might not have necessarily shared, but since I created the series as like a, hey, let me introduce you to some concepts, that it really comes down to some of the things that we all see and every day and think, you know, it's just secondhand to us at this point, is new to somebody else. So like I try and think of, I guess it's just really being aware of what's going on and like, hey, someone might benefit from this. So how can I, you know, at least share it in a way that somebody else might be able to benefit from it. And I think that's how I try and think about it. I've thought about like going through and, you know, laying things out and like scheduling things, but I haven't done that yet. I built out my header. I saw something where someone was talking about, you know, make your header worthwhile. So if somebody comes to your page, they know what you do, and they can see a visual representation of what you do. So I put the YouTube channel on there so they could find me through YouTube, but you can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram. So everything's kind of interconnected that way. And I post different things on different channels from time to time, but generally it's just sharing me, sharing my process, and trying to look at it through the lens of nothing that I share is wasted, but hopefully anyone that comes across it feels like they can take something from it and add to themselves and make themselves better in a way, just from lessons that I've learned.
I'm looking at your header right now. It's great. I think that's kind of good low hanging fruit that, you know, probably everybody can do. I'm definitely going to go redo my header now after looking at yours. Right. But I think you're dead right. People don't look at it, but you know, when I don't click on a lot of people's pages on LinkedIn, mostly because I don't want them to see that I'm like, you know, stalking them. But, you know, it really is the first like thing you see on somebody's LinkedIn profile and yours is like, oh, well, yeah, this guy's buttoned up. It says everything about him, like in the first few sentences. I can get to all your stuff. Definitely.
It's like a, it's like a resume, right? Like, right. I mean, you get what, 10 seconds to set an impression for people. And if they can find what they're looking for, my YouTube link is up there, what I do, and, you know, something specific about what I like to do. So I've also realized in doing this that the motion design is, and in sports is kind of specific. And then the things that I really want to do and the things that I'm starting to do a lot more now is focus on the automation and the toolkitting, which is basically blending code and motion design. So I'd like to get to the point where I'm close to being one of one, that people reach out to me because I'm one of the few people that have the skill set that I have. So, but yeah, it's just trying to put everything in front of people so they don't have to go find it.
And Darius, man, what about you? Yeah, we were talking a little bit before the podcast. You said you've been head down grinding. What's been on your plate?
Yeah, so unlike everyone else, I've done little to no sports. And I've finally gotten a chance to enjoy sports for the first time in a long time, which I'm kind of coming to grips with, but it's also given me a chance to actually do stuff that I've wanted to do for a long time. Like, naturally, I think we've talked about this when I got interviewed for my episode, but naturally I'm a storyteller and I like to tell stories, and I can, you know, if I never do another hype video, I will probably not lose any hair. So,
Amen.
Yeah, life has been interesting because I've been able to kind of step more into, corporate video per se. I've done some helping with some small businesses, you know, for some people that I know. In the last couple months, I've been, you know, it is election year, so it's something that I have a passion for, is getting people to vote.
The kids video that you shared was really good.
Thank you. And that, you know, I came with a vision and talked to the president of the organization, and he was like, let's roll with it. We have four concepts. We've knocked three of them out. We're working on the last one. But getting a chance to impact over short, you know, like, how many of those hype videos do you actually remember, you know? But a video like the one that you just mentioned, getting the chance to do something like that where the kids were absolutely phenomenal. Like, I would take them with me everywhere if I could. They were actually a part of the production process. As one was on screen, the other had headphones on and they're looking at the monitor and like instructing the others. So it was awesome to just be able to kind of get a rekindling of, like, it was almost like, hey, this is what you like to do, and you can actually do what you actually like to do and not just what you get to do. Kind of, you know, I love sports, have loved sports all my life, but, you know, getting a chance to do more community or corporate kind of videos and pieces, having fun with that. So if I never shoot sports again, maybe I'm okay.
Yeah, just to give people context too that haven't seen that, it was a video about getting, like, kids are not old enough to vote, but what people vote on impacts kids, right?
And the name of it was The Voiceless, because a lot of times we're like, oh, you got to be the voice for the voiceless. And actually, I mean, what better way to, like, put that message out there than using the actual people that can't participate? So if you haven't seen it, it is on my LinkedIn. I can't remember what my LinkedIn is, so let me go to that. And it's also on Instagram. If you go to League Creative Group, you'll be able to see all of the things that we've done leading up to the election, and also some other work. The one thing that on the flip side of not doing sports stuff, because I got so consumed into just hiding behind brands for so long, worked in college athletics for 13 years, and you really never get a chance to, well, when we got started, you know, it's more about the brand than about you, but that is not, you know, what it is today. It's like a lot more people are being able to push their work out, you know, alongside the brand, which I think is awesome. I think there's a good balance to where you can actually do that. If you're proud of your work, put it out there. You know, there's humble ways to do it. There's braggadocious ways to do it. Who cares? If you're, you know, if you're proud of it, share it with your friends, send it to everybody, you know, pop your stuff. You know, I won't say what I really want to say, but, you know, just put it out there.
And you've been freelance for
2 years to the date. I stopped working at Texas October 15th. Of 2020, and been figuring it out. You know, it's a long process. Sometimes some people figure it out soon, some people, you know, drag their feet with it and just kind of, you know, throw gum at the wall until something sticks. So it's been a really cool experience, though. I think I was talking to somebody about this a couple weeks ago. It's like taking the time, like I'm actually taking the time to kind of craft it the way that I want it, and learning to, you know, work with clients that you want to work with instead of clients that you have to work with, because that can, you know, at the end of the day, you got to make money, you got to, you know, feed your family or yourself, or, you know, pay rent, mortgage, and all that. But when you get to a point to where you get to choose who you work with, and your peace and mental health, like there's not a dollar amount that could replace that. So, it's fun, man. I get a chance to do some real cool, exciting stuff.
How do you look at, you know, promoting your work and promoting yourself as a freelancer? We talked about that with Justin, obviously, but for you, like, how have you gone about approaching that? Because I know that can be a challenge for people who are, you know, kind of getting their start in the freelance world.
Yeah, it's an interesting balance that I find it funny, because like not every client that you work with you want to attach your name to, like publicly. Like you'll do the work, but not every client. And I was telling a photography buddy of mine the other day when we were talking about this, I said, you know, I'm very protective of the clients that I associate my business's name with. If it's my name, that's one thing, because I, you know, my socials are, well, Instagram is closed, Twitter is now open, but I'm very protective of that, because the brand has to mean more, if that makes sense. So with the brand, it's like, I'll do the work for a client, but if I'm not really proud of it, if it's something that they're like, hey, I just want this, then, you know, I don't push it out there. That may be unfair to some of the clients, but at the same time, it's like I try to protect the brand as much as possible so that it can be known and associated with really good work. I try to always do good business. I try to always, you know, be protective of the business as if it's, you know, my child. So the freelance world is different for everyone. And, you know, in these upcoming episodes, you'll hear from some people who have done, you know, have just stepped out or have done it before. And it's different for everyone. And there's really not a one size fits all. Like everyone has to find their own pocket of who they want to work with. You can't be the one that, you know, never says no or always wants to just do it for recognition. Like, that's cool. And, you know, now that a lot of more younger people are joining the freelance community, we also have to kind of band together to make sure that we're not just giving the work away just so that we can have association. So, You know, a lot of that happens though. You know, I've had it happen. You know, people approach it like, oh yeah, well, you know, this may lead to something, and your name will be associated with this. And it's like, yeah, you know, I've met bigger people than this, right? So, you know, you can, and that's not a humble, that's not a brag. That's being humble. It's like, you know, exposure doesn't pay the bills. If nothing else is remembered, exposure does not pay the bills. So you have to associate and only accept people who are going to help you out long term as well. So Justin, I had a question for you. I forgot it, but I'm going to remember this. But in your short time as a freelance person full time, what's been the most exciting part about that, and what's been the least exciting?
Well, I'm going to start with the least exciting, chasing down invoices, because the net 30 is net 30 until it's not net 30. So thankfully, you know, I've been pretty fortunate that I haven't had to do a ton of that, but I've had to do a little bit of it. And, you know, it's just like nails on a chalkboard to get paid.
Yes.
But especially after, you know, you do all the work up front and then you have to wait 30 days. It's like delayed gratification, but by the time you get it, it's just kind of like, okay, well, the money in my bank account now. Okay,
yeah. Great.
Moving on. The best part, I think I've asked this question to myself even when I was working internally. I actually wonder, I feel like this might be a little start some arguments, but I'm wondering if it makes sense. There was this huge push to bring creative internally for all these teams. Does it make sense? Because when I was with organizations, we outsourced the best work. And the reason we outsourced the best work is because the C-suite or higher ups wanted to get a different perspective. Being the internal team didn't really classify as anything or allow us to create quote unquote better work according to them. I think there are certainly elements that make a ton of sense. The infrastructure, the institutional knowledge is huge. But the opportunities that I've had to work with different places is invigorating to me. And maybe it's just me and my personality, but being able to jump from different teams or hop into a project and work with a certain team on a project, and they kind of have some parameters that they work within, but they let you run free. Like, we're hiring you because we want you to take this and take it to a place that we couldn't take it to. That's the stuff that's exciting to me, and being able to work with different colors and different logos and different brands in that way, and help create value across more organizations, and kind of pick and choose what I want to do. I won't say that I get to pick and choose everything that I want to do, but I think the combination of all that stuff is has been exciting so far. And granted, I'm what, two and a half, three months in, so you know, you can ask me again in a year, but so far that's been what's exciting the most.
Yeah, I'll help your argument. I think that there should be some balance when, to answer your question, should they, you know, bring internal. I think that it's important. And I'm kind of biased because I worked for three Power Five universities, like, internally, and have had to fight that battle of, like, other companies coming in, swooping in on the best work, right? I think that should be reward to your internal staff. Like, give them that space to come up with some concepts, you know, whether it's three or four big projects a year that they work on. You will probably be able to retain them more if you reward them, even outside monetary, right? So,
but I think what you just highlighted is part of the problem. It's the time.
Yeah.
Well, we have 10 other projects that came up. And, yes. You know, this department's asking for this, the other department's asking for that. Well, we have people yep. available 24/7, so we're going to give those projects to you. And yeah. it's easier to do that internally than outsource that stuff.
Yeah. And I think for some of that is it's the same with interns and outsourcing. The way that I always wanted it was if I could give the interns good stuff, not just like crappy stuff that I didn't want to do, but if they could help me by doing this thing, then I could focus on, you know, these things. Or you get the outsource companies like you, myself, to do things that will add value and make it easier for the internal people. Like if they set up templates and then the internal people were able to just go and plug and play, that adds value to everything that you can do. But what we often do is, as these universities, is like, oh, well, let's just go spend $50,000 on this video board intro for 6 games a year. When, you know,
yep.
without even giving your internal people that opportunity to be a part of that, I think that's where a lot of people kind of fall flat because, hey, we got 200 other projects that we need to do. It's like, okay, well, I can make time if the reward is at the end. But yeah, give or take, I think that both are still necessary because you can't get old hat or, you know, anybody come in there and cover your practices every day. But a lot of that is built on relationships as well internally. So you need that internal like team that can help bridge the gap. But if someone else does come in to do a video board shoot, at least let your people be a part of that so that, you know, so that people can be happy with their small salaries, which we will talk about salaries on a episode at some point because it is important. Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that's a really good point where it's like something has to give as far as the amount of work that is being asked, I think, in a lot of departments. And, you know, do you want to take away and give the $50,000 job to an outside company and they're, you know, your people are still doing 20 other jobs that, you know, aren't as creative, aren't as fun for them? Or mm-hmm. do you want to give them that big intro video job and spend $50,000 on, you know, concepting, you know, templates, finding ways to make their lives easier in other ways? Like, to me, I think that the expectation for the day-to-day content to some extent has to change in athletic departments with what we've seen over the last couple of years, because you're seeing this mass exodus of people. I mean, both because of salary and just because of workload. Mm-hmm. And to me, your time is better spent templating the day-to-day stuff, like to an extent, like you want to make it fun. You want to make it creative when something yep. special comes up, like, yeah, I mean, go for it. But, you know, being able to spend time over the summer, you know, when you're not as busy templating or, you know, maybe freelancing out some templating work. So you're allowed to be more creative on the big projects. Like those big projects are the ones that are going to get you the return, mm-hmm. like on social, like the day-to-day stuff that theoretically you would template. To me, those are things that fans are probably just going to like watch, like, and move on from anyway. And your big stuff is the stuff that people are going to remember. So like give your people time to really focus on those big projects, the big splash hits, because those are the ones that are, as a brand, people are going to remember and have brand affinity for.
Yep.
Like, I think that that's something that, you know, I'm not in the college athletics world in the same way as I used to be, you know, working at a TV network now, but it just, to me, that is something that if I were in the creative space in college athletics, I would think pretty hard about it. Just like, what are we prioritizing and what do we want our big splash hits to be? Because that's where our focus should be. And by doing that, ideally, you can open up your creatives to A, have more fun because they're not working on mundane stuff every day. And B, you could open up their time to to make big home run hits, which are the things that your fans remember anyway.
Right. And you mentioned one very important part is like prioritization, like who's setting the priority and what is the priority? Because a lot of times it's just like, oh, we just need to do this. Why? Because we've always done it. Or
it's
because
a fire
this
hose of
wants
content, man.
And it's like,
that's it.
To get very little return. Or are we, how important is the actual ROI?
Yeah.
And what measures that? Like, how do you measure the ROI? Is it 100,000 views? Everything's not going to get that. So you can't just quantize it by that. You have to figure out like what's your standard going to be. If a press conference gets 400 views, okay, cool. But we're putting that press conference out there and we don't care about how many it gets.
Yeah, a freshman gets to run camera for that thing because who cares?
Exactly.
It's funny that you bring that up because I think I saw Tyson Hutchins post on Twitter about how, what was it for? Was it the, schedule release for the NBA. How the there's a text like a PR release that gets more hits or the schedule page gets more hits than any video that was obviously time and attention was put into and all that kind of stuff. But my response to that was I agree with it 100%. The challenge in pro sports anyway is the sponsorship element that mm-hmm. comes into play and the fact that it was it's like their big moment before the NFL season starts. So there's so many different moving parts for whether you're college or pro, and there's not like a one size fits all approach for sure. But yeah,
but at
it's
least
definitely
you know
interesting.
That.
Yeah.
You know, like you're choosing to prioritize that. You have reasoning behind it rather than just like, we need a video. It's
everyone
this
else
guy's
is doing
birthday.
It.
Right.
You know, it's like at some point you just, I think part of the problem is it's becoming a little more common, but there are very few roles in college athletics for strategy, like where all you're doing on the creative side is strategy. So many people running video departments, you know, running content at universities and on the, at least at the university level, are creating heavily as well. You know, they're still very hands-on in the creative and no one is saying like, hey, my job is to determine what our priorities are. My job is to look at the analytics. My job is to like, you know, drive strategy. You have a lot of people and like I said, it's becoming more common, thankfully, but you know, there are a lot of people that are, and even in the pros, you know, from what I know, where you're still hands-on creative for at least half of your day. And, mm-hmm. you know, when are you able to stop and actually, you know, set a calendar, say, why are we doing this? Does this make sense? And, you know, I think that's something that ideally is as content grows more important and people continue to grow their creative teams within sports, we'll find a place to have a, you know, creative director type of role where your main job is just driving the strategy, driving the why, driving the logistics of production rather than having to be, you know, worrying about having your hands in an editing software every day.
I think part of that too is the people, like even if you create that position, so many of, like as creatives, you want to still do the work. And I tell people all the time is the more you climb up, the less likely you are to like still have your hands in it in a lot of situations because it's required of you to go to these meetings to then bring back the information so that everybody's not having to go to every meeting. Everybody's not having to deal with a coach. But at the same time, naturally you're a creative for the most part. I mean, some people are blessed to, you know, get those positions where they can just kind of be the conduit. But I think that's the battle is bringing in people or elevating people to that and having a quality control creative that can say, okay, here's what we're going to be known for. Here's what we're going to do. Like every so often we're going to do these things that, you know, are just required and we just have to do, but we're going to work smarter, not harder. We're going to put out quality content, not a billion things, you know, so that we have a large quantity of things. It just has to be someone who cares or understands enough, because oftentimes, and I can only speak for college athletics, a lot of times you have, you know, people in marketing or in higher positions, associate ADs, execs, they don't even understand like what's required. And you tell them, oh, this is going to take 15 hours. 15 hours? Like, can I get that in 15 minutes? Like,
yeah.
A 10-second video takes 10 seconds.
Right. If Premiere acts right, maybe you can get it in a shorter amount of time. But, you know, we're not always in control of how fast something can get done. So,
well, and that's why you need, you know, to some extent, a salesperson and someone who communicates really well above them in a role like that, too, because, you know, without that, you get someone who bends over at, you know, every request and says, yes, my team can do that. And then, you know, if they're not actually doing the work, all you end up with is a very angry team.
Yeah. And you have a lot of angry teams, but, you know, it can be fun. Sometimes it's oftentimes a challenge. And, you know, that's up to other people to do now, because that's not me.
Same.
Oh, this was the question I had for you, Justin. Sorry to make this the Freelancers podcast.
I love it.
You mentioned about working with different colors. I look back on my time of like, I always worked with multiple sports at the same time. It's like 3 or 4 sports, basketball, football, all that. But it was always the same color, same brand, same logo. How exciting is that for you to be able to switch it up and kind of pick and choose? Like, does your brain love that you get that switch? Or would you rather it be, you know, a couple of logos and a couple of brands so that you wouldn't have to reinvent or rethink everything?
Yeah, there's definitely some institutional knowledge that comes with working with a brand and assuming that they have a well laid out guideline. I think that's part of the battle. And if it's a well laid out guideline, you can pick it up fairly quickly. But at the same time, just because it's well laid out doesn't necessarily mean that that's how things get approved or anything like that. Like, you could, it just depends on the team too. You could go through and think you have something, and then it just doesn't feel right to the team. And I think that's one of the challenges, is because you don't live it. Everywhere I worked, I lived it. I breathed it. I understood it wholeheartedly. I mean, I think I know enough to be able to slot myself in and take some risk with it. But I think a handful is probably the sweet spot. You know, you don't want to go like way over the top, but it's funny that Garrett was talking about templates earlier, because that's really what I want to get into doing a lot more of, which basically is like, you know, template across anything and everything. Build it once and leverage it till the end of the day. Automate it. And I think I showed you guys a couple things that I was working on. But as far as like working directly with a brand, I don't think it makes sense to go with like 15 or 20 different teams, because I think you start to blend them together, because they all have the special things that they like or want to do that makes it challenging for someone like me in motion. Graphic designer might have a different take on that, but in motion, the way things move and incorporating that brand is can be a challenge for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know for me, you know, moving from working at one school to moving to the Big Ten Network, where it's like I'm dealing with 14 and soon 16 different schools, like that variety has been nice too, where you're kind of getting different people to work with, different traditions, different, you know, venues you're going into all the time. To me, that just keeps it fresh. And, you know, I really like that side of things. So I can see how that would land for you, Justin. I don't know, Brock, if you feel similarly at all, where, you know, you're going into different venues and working with different teams and all that, if that keeps it fresh for you too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my biggest issue was, and this was more a little bit more prevalent at the Chiefs in the NFL than it was at Notre Dame. But when I was in the NFL and I was more on the creative side than I was, you know, engineering, is it felt like I was covering the same 52 guys 12 months a year. Right. And it's like there's only so many stories to tell. But we had a 52 week a year programming schedule. And during the season, we had to make three shows a week. It's like, it's a lot, like you just run out of ideas. Like it comes down to it. It's like, how do we tell, you know, Alex Smith's story, you know, the same way over and over and over and over again? Great story. This was obviously before he was injured and came back and all that. But, you know, not to pick on Alex Smith, but like there's just only so many times you can tell those stories or put new spins on game recaps and things like that. So, yeah, it's one of the things I like the most about my job is I go in, you know, I kind of spend 6 months with a team or so, 6 to 9 months. And then, you know, I hate to say move on because I keep in contact with pretty much all of our clients. But it's, you know, you get to move to a new venue, you get to meet new people, you get to work with new brands, new ownership, new, you know, this and that. And I really get to see how a lot of different teams are ran, how a lot of different things are done. And fortunate for me, I kind of get to pick up on those things, you know, and kind of compare it to my time in athletics and compare it to the places I've worked, you know, and see how different departments run. And that's a lot of fun. And I'm sure Justin, you see that a lot too, you know, working with other teams. And Garrett, you going into other Big Ten schools and just kind of see, I'm sure a lot of Big Ten schools are similar in certain ways and extremely different department wise than others. So yeah, I love that side of the job. It keeps it fresh and keeps it interesting.
If you root for who pays your bills, it's going to get to the point where you're going to be rooting for everybody soon, huh?
It's my problem. Yeah. I'm a huge. Well, I've always been a Mets fan. They've always been my favorite NL team. I know. I don't know why. You knew me in college. I had Mets gear all the time. Come on. Garrett's making a face. That's why I'm saying that. People can't.
It's
see
true,
that.
But I.
Sorry, I just forgot. Phillies fan. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, no, I don't. I don't actively you care about the Mets. Feeling. I just, man,
I was always a Royals fan over everything, but
of course,
NL team. I always liked the Mets, so that was an easy one.
Sorry,
Carolina Hurricanes. I never had a hockey team, so that was an easy one. I can root for Carolina Hurricanes. Phoenix Suns. I've been a Phoenix Suns fan my whole life, so that was very, very easy. You know. So,
but what's your next project? Do you get another one? You get to root for
Nebraska.
Nebraska. Yeah, there you go. No, get to go back to my College of Journalism, where Justin and Garrett and I went to college, get to put in a room there, starting tomorrow, actually, which is fun. That's the kind of thing you know, you hope you're able to do, you know, and hope you're able to be a part of your alma mater that way. So, yeah.
So what can we look forward to in this next season of the Sports Creative Podcast, gentlemen? Because it's been a while, right? You know, lots of change. You know, the pandemic is pretty much over. Or in some people's eyes, it's been over for 2 years.
Hey, I just got COVID 2 weeks ago, so.
Oh.
Oh, buddy.
That's still a thing.
Yeah. Still, yeah. Apparently, it's huge resurgence lately, so. Hadn't caught it yet. Yep, that was fun.
So, yeah.
Not over yet.
Glad that you are on the other side, hopefully, of that. I've had it. It's no fun.
Yeah, hopefully we, you know, we've already got a couple guests in the can to share out and some great insights and perspectives around the industry. And I think, you know, that's really what we started with the hope of doing, was just sharing other people's experiences, trying to get different perspectives around the industry, whether that's college to pro or what they're doing. You know, we all have different perspectives from what we do on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, just bringing in different people to highlight and, you know, raise different voices, I think is going to continue to be the big thing for us.
Looking forward to it, y'all.
Glad to have you back, Garrett.
Yeah.
It's been
good
too
to
long.
Be back. I know. Been too long.
It's great to see Brock. Great to see he's doing well.
Living that Kansas City life.
Yeah.
He's barbecuing it up.
Yeah.
Ask me in a year after this NFL stadium. Ask me how I'm doing. Then we'll.
I'm still sad that Brock lived in Austin and we never
met him. I know. I'm the worst. I mean,
I'm the worst because I never there. Come out.
Lived there.
You had a house here.
Air quotes.
Mr. Ambassador.
My wife Mr. and kid lived there way more than I did.
But yeah, I think it's about to, you know, heat back up. I think this is very necessary. You know, you get a chance to share with some of the best in the industry, some known, some unknown, to help push it forward. It's changed a lot since all of us got started. We are all doing something probably different from when we first started. So that's always cool to see that, you know, evolution does happen and change is inevitable. So, you know, you just have to find your way to, you know, ride the wave, I guess.
Well, if you're listening and you have people you think we should talk to, you know, great stories in the industry, send them along. We're always interested to know who we should talk to next.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.